Well, that's our theme music from Sarita Murdoch's Many Lines. I'm Sheldon Brown, and this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. And fortunately, we are funded by Framework, which is a great privilege for our Mental Health Radio show. In the past several months, in fact, we've talked on Take It From Us about suicide and how to prevent it. To some extent, this focus has been a coincidence rather than a deliberate step. It began last November with a broadcast about a book called The Roaring Silence and continued with an interview about suicide prevention in the rural communities of Taranaki with Gordon Hudson. And then we interviewed the founder of Hope Walk, a suicide prevention campaign to bring those impacted by suicide together through walks. Today we revisit the book initiated by Devonport's Depot Art Space to stimulate a much-needed conversation about New Zealand's tragically high suicide rates. The Roaring Silence, which is the title of the book, was launched at Art Space in late February and features stories of suicide survivors and those who have lost loved ones to suicide. In the studio to talk about the launch and the project is volunteer Julia West, who co-edited and designed this book. Welcome, Julia, to Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and thanks for being the person who brought my attention to this exciting and essential book. Julia, it's your first interview on radio.
Yes, it is.
Right, so that's always a bit traumatic, and that's coupled with getting caught up in Auckland's traffic this morning, which is never a treat.
That's right.
Yeah, well, so how did you get involved with the Roaring Silence?
I just need to have a little cough here.
Yeah.
Right. I got involved because I saw a call out for contributions, I think in the community newspaper, and I wanted to write something. And so I did write, I think it was a reasonably bleak poem, and I wasn't that happy with it, but it was deadline day, and I decided it would be good to ring the depot and see if I could get an extension over the weekend, which I did. So I got to speak to Amelia Harris, who was who's the media producer there and the lead on this project. As it happens, I ended up going in there on the following Monday because I wanted to meet her. And I also felt a bit, you know, I was a little bit challenged by giving this piece of work over, like letting it go and also having it published because it was around my own journey. And it was quite personal. Anyway, as a result of going in there, it turned out that they, Amelia was, she's just really needing, I offered to give her some help around the communications, proofing, editing and that sort of thing. So I started going in there regularly. And it was actually just a really cheeky way of getting my extension, my deadline extended.
But you really stepped into it because it sounds as though you took on a big responsibility.
Yeah, that's right. So, it turned out that in the end, we ended up doing it in-house, the whole design and layout program. So Amelia and I worked on that closely together. And it was just a huge privilege, really, to be part of the project.
Is that your background, communication and layout and design?
It used to be, about 10 years ago. I hadn't been sort of in that industry for a while, but it sort of brought it all to the fore again, and I still remembered how to use the programs. And it was a real pleasure getting back into doing design and layout. Yeah.
So you've touched on the fact that you wanted to make a contribution, what you were a little unsure about what you had prepared. You described it as bleak. Did you think that it was too bleak?
Yeah, I did, actually. And I think Amelia agreed with me. It was bleak. And, I mean, it's an interesting thing when you... I think for other, it would be interesting to hear other contributors' points of view on this, but I think when you are dealing with a subject like suicide, which we know has got quite a lot of stigma around it and some shame, that it's really challenging to, if you've been down the path of having suicidal thoughts, or you've been in the classic black hole with anxiety or depression, it's really hard to go back. You know, even if you're feeling really great today, as some listeners I'm sure are aware of, it's really hard to go back and remember and recall that time.
So do you think that is sometimes a dangerous thing to do, to go back into that dark hole of the past that has been so traumatic and painful?
Dangerous. It can be. It depends what state of mind you're in on the day. So, yes, it can be, I think, and that's a concern. And I've certainly found it challenging even coming here today. Yeah, it was quite big for me to actually get out of bed this morning and decide that I was able, capable, had the capacity to come and talk about a subject that is really charged. Yeah.
Was it just because of the subject itself, which has sensitivities about it, it has stigma? Obviously, the title of this book, The Roaring Silence, suggests so much about how we don't talk about suicide. So, to some extent, you're on a radio show talking publicly about it, and I guess that's there's a conflict there.
Yeah, it's not about conflict, but it's certainly hugely sensitive, and yeah, it's a vulnerability. It takes courage to speak up. That's why this project came about, because Linda Blinko at the depot was so keen to start, you know, breaking down the barriers around the silence around suicide, and the fact that from my point of view, for people who have lost loved ones to suicide, they are traumatised and they have a some shame around the fact that someone that they know that was potentially part of their family has taken this path. And so there's quite a lot of shame and stigma around people who have lost loved ones, and there's also a lot of shame and stigma for those people who have attempted suicide and survived, because that's not seen as particularly cool, you know, and it's hugely challenging for people.
Are you aware that a very famous Australian rugby player took his life just recently, and the first Super Rugby game that was played last Saturday acknowledged this man, but without actually declaring how he had died, which because I knew, and I imagine probably most of the rugby community at this particular Crusaders game in Christchurch may have known, but it seemed to me to leave a big vacuum about how a man who had played for Australia, he'd played for Super Rugby teams, he was a very fit man, a famous rugby player in Australian circles, you know, how did he come to be dead?
Yeah, I think it's a really... I mean, I wasn't aware of that. I think I knew vaguely that there had been a death, and that a sporting person had died, but I had no idea it was around... So it was about that he'd committed suicide. And I think you raise a really good point. I'm feeling nervous even talking about it. But I think you raise a really good point that we know that it's not appropriate to talk about method. Right, that's something that the Mental Health Foundation is very clear about. You don't talk about how someone's committed suicide, but we need to really understand why. Because the fact that we've got such high suicide rates in New Zealand means we have to start speaking up. And if we don't know why people are committing suicide, then how are we ever going to help the people that are around there today alive and struggling?
So in the book, The Roaring Silence, which I obtained a copy at the launch, and I have started reading some of the, if you like, the introductory articles from the former chief coroner, from Manu Fotu, who is the suicide prevention manager at Waitemata District Health Board.
Yeah.
In reading the book yourself, have you got any insights as to why people are committing suicide?
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is around lack of connection, lack of... I think it's within families. Often people within families are finding that they don't feel connected to their family. There's been issues at home, whether it's, you know, conflict between parents or, you know, all sorts of things. It can be the big scary things like, you know, domestic violence or abuse. But it's also the less scary things like parents that aren't coping well themselves, the children not getting the time and the love that they need to flourish. Relationship, a lot of suicides around relationships, especially for young ones, that they've had a breakup, you know, they might be in their teens or, you know, late or early 20s, and they've lost a loved one.
Well, what about just the pressures of living in Auckland? I mean, your experience this morning, and I don't want to dwell on it, but I mean, moving around the city is stressful. And I don't move at peak times, but I do have to go out to South Auckland to work, and I return at, say, 2:30 on the Southern Motorway, and it looks more like a car park than a motorway most of the time. And I find that very stressful.
Right.
You know, it's even just being able to move from one suburb to another in order to meet one's obligations of having a coffee with somebody. And so often we have to contact them and say, well, I'm stuck in traffic. You know, I guess this is a small element. The bigger elements for me are the housing crisis, where people are going to be able to live, how they pay the rent, how they pay their mortgages, and generally that ratchets up the pressure. I mean, personally, do you feel that?
It's interesting that you should raise that, because I don't, actually. I don't feel, I mean, I live in Auckland by choice, and the traffic's crazy. And I came here from a really small town where there was no traffic lights, let alone traffic, which was great. But I find it quite interesting, because I guess I've created a life for myself where I don't generally have to really rush for things. And so I actually find sitting in traffic quite relaxing, which is really weird. I know. But so I use it as, usually if I'm not running late, which I was this morning, that I use it as a time to chill out and relax and national radio. But, that you know, I'm probably a minority who doesn't get stressed out about traffic.
But it, maybe that's also a reflection of your very good self-care techniques and looking after yourself, and maybe adopting a strategy when it is stressful to turn it around.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's one of the big issues around, firstly, just to relate to what you've said around the huge stresses that people have in the city around housing and being able to pay, you know, to put food on the table, and, you know, the stresses of getting around. I think those are really significant. However, I think that if you have good support at home, if you have, if you live within a either a family environment or a flatting environment, or where you're feeling loved and supported, you can cope with pretty much anything. And, you know, the reality is that a lot of the youth that are at risk from suicide are in small towns, especially up in Northland. And they don't have those stresses. They don't have the same financial or the economic or the city stresses that we have, but they're still hugely at risk. So I think that tells us that there's something else going on. And for me, I think it's around I think life has got more challenging for the youth coming through now, because there is a lot less stability and security. Stability within families and security around what they're going to be doing next and what the future holds.
We did talk to a leader, a Maori leader in Northland who lives in Kaikohe, and I think the picture that she painted, and we were certainly talking about suicide because Kaikohe has been a focus, I believe, but it's probably the poverty, it's probably the lack of work, it's probably, you know, she painted a picture of people with lived experience of mental health still walking the streets, picking up cigarette stubs, sort of level of poverty and lack of direction, I suppose. So that's the other end, the poverty end of our society.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously that has a huge impact on what's going on within the house.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and the stress that those people are under, you know. Yeah. It's huge stress to not have enough money to feed your family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to The Roaring Silence, which is the book that was launched on last Saturday. It says in the back cover, too dangerous to discuss, too shameful to admit to. Suicide has been shrouded in silence and secrecy for far too long. How do you think we're going to break down those barriers? And I guess you have already alluded to all the stigma and the discrimination and the grief that surrounds suicide.
Yeah, so breaking down barriers, I think we're doing it right now. I think by you and I having this conversation and going out on the radio is really important. I think we have to keep talking. And by sharing experiences, I think what I found really amazing about this project was the number of people that contributed. You know, the number of people that sent in poetry, prose, beautiful artworks, all their stories in different forms. And that takes a lot of courage to put your name to something that is quite personal. And I just really want to, you know, firstly give a shout out to those contributors and say what an amazing job they did to speak up and to put their names to their work and to contribute to this publication. And it really is about starting those conversations and even just telling people that I was working on this project, even on the way through, that started some really interesting conversations in my own life, you know, with people that I know or have come across. And that's what we want to keep doing.
Firstly, let's just talk about how many contributors participated in the Roaring Silence.
Mm. There's 79 contributors, most of them New Zealanders and, you know, a good chunk from Auckland. But we got contributions, I think, from North and South Island, from overseas. We had one coming in from, I think, Guernsey Island or something. It came from all over the globe, actually.
And some relatively high-profile people, I believe. The cartoonist from the New Zealand Herald made a contribution.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Yeah, no, there's some high-profile people. Caitlin Smith, who's quite a well-known musician, she's written, or there's an article, an interview with her in the book.
Yes, yeah. And I started to read that, and of course Caitlin sung at the launch on Saturday, and she actually wrote that song when she was age 12 or 14, I read in the book. So there's all this wonderful information in this book, The Roaring Silence.
Yeah.
Let's take a music break. We're going to play Tina Turner again today on Mental Health Radio, taken from us, and it's the first title, the first track is Back Where You Started.
Hey, now it's
Well, that's classic Tina Turner, back where you started on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us. We're talking to Julia West. She's described as a volunteer, but also co-edited and had another and designed this book. So that hardly sounds like a voluntary role, Julia. I hope you got more than just dinner out of your contribution.
No comment.
No comment.
I mean, for me, it was such an incredible, it was just such an incredible, I mean, privilege really is a bit of a charged word, but it was just a really incredible, saying it again, it was wonderful to be involved in the project, and it came at a time where I had the flexibility to take it on, and it was just incredible. I haven't had such an amazing working relationship with another person, probably in a lifetime. Amelia and I just clicked from the word go, and we just seemed to be on the same wavelength. And we were just, it was a great collaboration. And I think that really is part of the reason it's such a wonderful book, because the collaboration between us just, just went from strength to strength.
I mean, this is a very personal story, a personal question, but how does that impact your own mental health?
Working on this book?
Yeah.
That's a good question. It certainly, I found... it was huge for me, actually, because I'd been down, I'd had quite a difficult time previously, and it stirred stuff up. Even sitting here now, I can feel the same thing. I can feel the distress running through my body, just even remembering how I felt. So there is a risk factor around that for me and for anyone else that's been into, I guess I need to disclose that I had, I had had a huge loss. I'd lost my father and my partner within a couple of months of each other, and then had a mother diagnosed with Alzheimer's within that same time period of about 3 or 4 months. And so it was like the three legs of my stool had all been whipped out from under me at the same, and it was huge, the impact. And there was all sorts of other complexities going on at the time. And because of that, and because of my my family sort of falling apart, because of the loss of, one and a half parents, let's say, I went into huge depression and then developed quite a strong anxiety disorder, which sort of had me waking up petrified and quite anxious every day.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I wasn't aware of the background to your loss and grief. I met you at a Mental Health Awareness Week workshop, I guess, out west, where I was given an assignment there that was much greater than I anticipated, and had to actually take it from us out live to another venue other than the radio studio. Mm-hmm. And then introduce 8 fairly important artists, including Caitlin Smith. I had no idea that that was the challenge that I was going to be faced with. That's where we first met, and it does strike me that in those 5 months or so, you have blossomed. And I'm thinking that perhaps it's working on this project.
Absolutely. It's been incredible to be part of a creative community, which is what Depot Art Space is. And I have been welcomed there with open arms, and I have loved every minute that I've been in there. And as I said, working with Amelia up in her little attic has been a little sanctuary for me. And sometimes I still go there and just hang out with her and I do my own work. Part of my blossoming is because I stepped away from organised work a year and a bit ago. I used to work at Housing New Zealand as a tenancy liaison officer, which was a hugely interesting and rewarding job. But I found working inside such a huge organisation was not a great fit for me. And since then, I've been freelancing and creating my own life, and that's been the blossoming. And this also means that I've had flexibility around time to pick up projects that really mean a lot to me. And this has been the biggest one so far.
Well, also, it sounds as though it's a very positive recovery story. I mean, I sense that you're still on that journey. But, you've raised the whole issue of art art and creativity as a wonderful therapy. Mm. And that was one of the therapies that helped me about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that I actually had some capabilities in creativity.
Mm.
You know, and that's had a roll-on effect to my life today, where I think I've got some ability to select a nice piece of artwork that I can enjoy in my own apartment. You know, so, you know, therapy, art is a great therapy.
Absolutely. I think expression, I think for me, the key to recovery from any sort of ailment, whether it's a mental health one or otherwise, is just being able to express yourself. And for some people, that's art. For some people, it's writing. For some people, it might be dancing. Who knows? But I think it's really important to keep expressing ourselves and giving ourselves the opportunity to get our emotions out of our bodies and to switch our brains off, actually. I think a key for me was learning how to switch my sort of thinking, to switch the thinking off and to stop worrying. Because worrying is just a really, really ineffective thought process, which doesn't really get us anywhere, does it?
Often related to the future.
Yeah, that's right. Worrying about the future, and we don't know what the future holds, really. And so we may as well just let it go. And I think that's been one of the keys for me, is actually developing tools and skills to live in the present, to bring myself right back to the moment we're actually here now. And it's interesting, I think yesterday or the day before, I heard this great piece of information on Radio New Zealand about bird watching. Did you hear that?
No, I haven't.
All right. They were just reporting on some research which indicates that bird watching is actually really good for your mental health, and that it reduces the occurrences of depression and anxiety. And it was quite funny because I was saying apparently it doesn't matter what kind of bird you watch, which is hardly surprising, really. And I think Amelia and I were talking about this. We went down to the beach and we were dog watching, actually, between us, especially the playful little pups that break all the rules and, you know, kick sand in people's faces, which was our form of entertainment. And I think anything like that, whether it's watching birds, cats, you know, dogs, who knows, maybe it's even watching, I don't know, ants across the kitchen bench. Anything like that that brings you into out of yourself and into engagement with something in your environment is really good for your mental health, because it brings you into the present. You don't have time to worry, do you, if you're doing that?
Well, I think living in the present is the answer, personally, and mindfulness has helped me focus on the present. And if I wake up in the middle of the night a little bit stressed, I just have a little slogan which says, focus on the now and relax, and invariably I will go back to sleep.
Yep.
You know, it might take a little while, but it's a very peaceful way to get back to sleep. And if I'm not sleeping, I'm super relaxed, so I'm getting some benefit from being in bed. Yeah, well, I mean, one of the points that is raised, and it's one that we have made on Take It From Us a number of times recently, and this was made by the former chief coroner, and he says the reality is that our suicide numbers used to be about half the road toll and are now about twice the road toll. So the question asked is, a lot of effort went into reducing the road toll. Whatever they did, it worked. So can't we do something similar about suicide? Mm. So he makes this point, which we have been making a number of times on Take It From Us, that the suicide rate now, provisionally about 579 for the 12 months of 2016, our road toll is about 330. Mm. So, you know, they've put huge dollars into getting the road toll down. Do you see any evidence of addressing the suicide rate with any serious funding?
I'm not experienced in that arena. I certainly don't see it. I mean, I think I can't really comment on the funding side of those things. I think the key is talking and getting the word out there in the media, and to do that in a way which is productive and positive. Certainly I know that the John Kirwan campaign had a huge positive impact on men speaking up about depression. And of course we know that depression can often lead to suicide. So I think that campaign has been hugely successful in giving men the permission to speak, whether it's to their GP or their loved one or, you know, whoever. So I think that has been a positive thing, and I think that was funded by some, whether it was...
The point I would make, though, is, and you stressed the importance of having conversations around these things. I mean, I play a lot of tennis, and I mix with some pretty blokey sort of Kiwi guys. There is no way that I could have a conversation with them about... the suicide rate, or probably not even mental health.
Really? And I feel so disappointed. I just think it's so incredibly sad.
Well, it's sort of, I think, we don't want to be reminded that New Zealand has these issues. You've mentioned family violence, child abuse, I mean, suicide and mental health. I don't hear conversations around those things, even if they're front page for several days.
I think it's fear. I think it's people are fearful. I think we're still, you know, we live in a Western culture which is afraid of death, and suicide's a pretty violent version of death, because someone's actually choosing to, you know, dare I say on radio, kill themselves. That's what people do when they commit suicide. You know, even saying committing suicide is actually a bit of a euphemism. People choose to end their lives. And why do they do that? They do that because, this is my opinion only, they do that because they're in incredible emotional pain. And it's hugely sad that we've got people who feel so isolated or so alone that they feel the need to end their lives. And I think especially for teenagers, because let's face it, they don't have the maturity to make rational decisions when they're distressed. And so those kids in particular really need help. They need to know they've got a safe space to go to, safe place, and they also need to know that there's someone's got their back, that there's some one person in the world that they can trust. And I think the important thing is to develop those skills for those kids, and to give them a toolbox of things that they can do, you know, whether it's like, you know, go and watch a bird, go and watch the surf, go for a walk, and, you know, just teaching them really simple, practical tools. You talk about mindfulness, meditation, you know, making that, giving it maybe a new name so that it's more accessible for kids.
Well, let's come back after another music break and talk a little bit more about the importance of community in these conversations. We're playing Tina Turner on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and we've got a track called What's Love Got To Do With It?
Of your hand makes my pulse react, but it's only the thrill Women in the house tonight. Once more. Are there any girls in the house tonight? There you are. All right, girls. I want you to say, what's love got to do with it? You say, what's love got to do, girls? Love got to do, got to do. Fellas! One more time! What? Everybody say!
What love got to do, got to do it. What love, I'm not gonna end in motion. What love got to do,
that's Tina Turner with What's Love Got to Do with It. And I guess, Julia, love's got a lot to do with it when you're talking about suicide.
Absolutely, because I think it's something that, you know, we need to know that we're loved, don't we? I think everybody deserves that, and some people don't feel that. And I think it's really important that we focus on how we include people in our lives, how we accept people just the way they are, how we support each other.
We have to invest in our friendships.
We do, absolutely. And I think also just to start to talk about the hard stuff. And you mentioned that, you know, that you go into social activities where people aren't able to talk about these things. And I just think we have to keep trying. And I noticed even amongst my own, you know, diverse bunch of friends that when I sent out the invitation over Facebook for the depot launch, because not only is it a book about suicide, but it's also a project that I'm really proud of and the collaboration, as I said, with the depot and the workmanship with Amelia, I only had two people out of a lot of Facebook friends that turned up on the day. And I think, I haven't done any research on this, but I imagine that for a number of my friends it's too challenging a topic.
Sorry, just to clarify, you had a number of friends turn up at the launch.
Two out of a lot.
Oh, two out, just the two.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, and I thought that, and it was interesting, and I got, you know, the occasion, a few people couldn't make it and responded that way. Some people responded afterwards and said, sorry, I couldn't make it. And some people were just silent. And I'm going to go back and actually ask those friends that were silent, just like, is there, you know, was there any particular reason that you stayed away?
Right.
And I'm imagining that for a couple of them, a few of them, it's because the topic is just too challenging.
Well, the book is called The Roaring Silence. We need to tell our listeners how to access this. There's a website.
Yes, there is. So to buy the book, if you go to the Depot Space website and go to Depot Press, there's a tag at the top that says Depot Press, and then there's an email and a phone number for Margot, who does the distribution of books.
So the actual website is Depot Art Space, or...
We can
bring that to you a little bit later in the show. But we talked about, just before the music break, essentially about the importance of community and connection and trying to address isolation. I mean, has the feedback that you've had, and I guess you've given me a little bit of an insight in terms of the response from your friends via Facebook, I mean, people are still shying away. They're brushing this subject under the carpet.
Yeah, absolutely. And for really good, you know, for reasons where maybe they've lost someone themselves to suicide and it's still something they haven't talked about, or they've had suicidal thoughts, or they just don't want to go there. I just think it is hugely challenging for people. And I noticed that one of the friends that actually did come down, he came down from Waipu, and he was the person. And again, I'm having trouble disclosing this, but I think it's really important to say that I have attempted suicide. And I gave it a pretty good go and wasn't successful. And that's a ridiculous word to use, isn't it? I wasn't successful at killing myself.
Well, it was probably a great thing that you were unsuccessful, because I think one of the points that I made on a show about suicide and suicide prevention is, do we capitalise on the stories of people who have attempted suicide and who've gone on to have very productive and happy and fulfilling and flourishing lives?
Yeah, and I think it's a really hard thing to speak up about, because I feel ashamed, I'm embarrassed, I'm nervous about the fact that so few people in my own life know that. But I think it's really important. I feel that I have a responsibility to speak up, because, as you said, I have survived and I am flourishing. And how did that happen? And what was it that drove me to, you know, I'm a reasonably articulate person, and what drove me to a place where I couldn't even speak up and ask for help? What happened? And because my story is, you know, obviously it's unique to me, but there's some commonalities there for other people. And when, you know, suicide's impacted on me in that I've had five people, I think, in my life who have committed suicide. Most of them have been men in their 40s and 50s, who have been in family situations where they've had difficulties, all for different reasons, but all feeling not able to speak up, not able to speak up and ask for help.
Well, at the same tennis club that I referred to, I was having somebody on. This has happened some time ago. And this guy turned to me and said, "Why don't you go and have another mental breakdown?"
Oh, goodness.
And he was a teacher at a celebrated private school in the city.
Mm.
Now, I'm never going to forgive him for that comment, because I felt I was an ambassador for recovery.
Mm.
I don't want to be reminded of pasts that were black and painful.
Mm.
You know, so while I'm civil to him, I actually find him to be a very ignorant and unenlightened person. And I wonder how somebody like that can be teaching our children and influencing pupils at high-class schools.
That's absolutely, again, what a tragedy that he's operating in that way and saying such things. And I think, to me, I just wonder what's driving him and what he's running away from and what he's not dealing with. Because he's pushing you away and pushing away the subject of his mental health by making a caustic comment. So I would just be really interested to know what he's dealing with to say such a thing. Yeah,
I mean, I hope that you regard yourself as a really persuasive ambassador for recovery, you know, because, I mean, the story that you have told where the three parts of the stool were cut out from under you, I mean, it's hardly surprising that hard times were a result.
And I survived that. It was actually 3 years after those events, after my partner and my father dying and my mum's diagnosis. It was actually 3 years after that that I ended up getting into a really bad way again. And part of that was because I didn't have support within my family. I was living remotely from them for a start, and there was conflict around care for my mother. You know, how ridiculous. So it just, you know, there was conflict within the family, you know, and who would have expected that? We're a pretty stable family, but there was conflict between the brothers and sisters, and so I couldn't turn to them for help.
And so how often, I mean, I've got two or three friends who have elderly mothers in care, and there is conflict because it's left to just one person to take on all the responsibilities. Mm. Another member of the family lives, you know, in the South Island. The other one is not particularly well, either mentally or physically. Mm. And so, you know, there are resentments that build up. Mm. Where is the collective love if you like. I mean, I have very limited family. I have no parents or relatives. I have three children, two of whom I have a fairly close link to. And so when I learnt about personal responsibility, this really came home to me that, you know, nobody is going to find a magic pill, a magical solution to sort out whatever mental health challenges I might have. It's down to me. And I think in many ways maybe we are starting to come round to this, that we have to handle these challenges on our own without support.
Yeah, and why is that? I mean, but do we? I mean, I think absolutely. I mean, I've come to the same conclusion. I have to sort my own stuff out, and I need to find my own tools, and I've done that. And so, as I said, I am doing really well and have been for a few years now. And, yeah, I think it is a really important part of the journey into recovery and, enjoying life again is to say, hey, I need to back myself up. I need to look after myself. I need to love myself. I need to find ways of nourishing my connection to other people and also my connection to myself, and do things that I really love doing and put myself first, not everyone else.
Well, we did a program last Tuesday, which is up on our website on www.takeitfromus.co.nz, about self-care and caring for ourselves, but also ensuring that we choose positive relationships in order to, enhance our mental health. Let's take another music break with Tina Turner, and this is probably a very relevant title as well, Show Some Respect.
Yeah.
let's show some respect with Tina Turner, and we're talking to Julia West about this book launched last Saturday, or Saturday week ago, in fact, called The Roaring Silence. Respect, Julia.
Yes.
It would seem that respect would be, you know, respecting somebody that has been through hard times, maybe has attempted suicide, but is back on the recovery path. I mean, for those of us in mental health, that just generates respect, doesn't it? But yeah. I guess a lot of people in the general public, they don't have the background to realise just what a challenging journey that can be.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I just really want to speak to the courage of anyone that's overcome mental health issues or challenges and is on a good path again. And also a call out to those that are still struggling and just saying, hey, if you're struggling, find one person that you can trust and sit down and ask for some help.
Well, through community mental health organisations like Framework, there are community support workers available. There are, at Framework, our personal focus program where you can have, these programs will provide some structure in your day. And I'll put a plug in for the Wellness Recovery Action Plan workshops that I facilitate. We're working on developing another one of those fairly soon. And they go through all these wonderful things like personal responsibility, hope, getting supports that our guest Julia mentioned. Now, we do have the website for Depot Art Space. It is www.depotartspace.co.nz if you're interested in purchasing The Roaring Silence. The book costs $30. I would say that's a hugely valuable investment. Just $30 for The Roaring Silence. Look out on that depotartspace.co.nz site for Depot Press. And Depot Art Space also has its own Facebook page, and I'm sure people at the Depot would love some likes and support.
Absolutely, and I mean just to let listeners know, the book is it's close to an A4 size. It's full colour. It's 160 pages, and not only is it a really good read with some really courageous stories, it's also got some beautiful artwork in it. Just stunning artwork from people around New Zealand. So yeah,
and some very important messages from the former Chief Coroner, also from Manu Fotu, who works in suicide prevention with Waitemata District Health Board, and Julia, our guest, has also mentioned the very moving and emotional story from Caitlin Smith, jazz singer who sung at the launch as well, just impromptu and spontaneous. Yeah, so this is I think a huge investment for anybody who has been touched by suicide. We were going to talk about, like you were talking about, conversations that you've had with people through your involvement in producing. What's sort of been your conclusion about the feedback that you've had?
In relation to the book itself?
Or, well, to the subject of suicide.
Yeah, I think, again, as I said, I think there's a lot of fear. I think people, some people just like, you know, they will shut you down or avoid it, or use humour to avoid, actually. It's quite a common one. But then anybody that has actually had any exposure to suicide, either through a loved one or their own path, are really, they just open up. And all the way through this, I've had incredible conversations with people who have been really encouraging about the project and really wanting to have their own voice heard. And so I've had some fantastic conversations with people who have actually been yearning for support and really wanting to find someone they can actually tell their story to.
So that's a bit of a point in that we have been talking about this very sensitive subject. There are a number of suicide helplines which are in fact listed in the book. Have you got that page there, Julia?
There's a number of references, but especially at the back there's a whole number of pages. A directory of help services which covers everything from helplines and crisis lines through to addiction services, mental health, counselling, etc.
Yeah, so obviously Lifeline might be the first port of call, and their number is 0800 543 354. I mean, if anybody wanted to call me, it's Sheldon Brown, who's host of Mental Health Radio. Take it from us on 021 976 564. Well, thank you very much, Julia. I see there's a great smile of relief on your face. I must congratulate you on, you know, how you have managed this first radio interview.
Thank you. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Take it from us, Community Notice Board. Thanks to the Like Minds, Like Mind campaign and framework.
And in relation to the subject of suicide, the Mental Health Foundation and Grow New Zealand are running a workshop and little hui. It's called Zero Suicide, a New Zealand Response. It's on the 9th of March. It's going to be at the Jet Park Airport Hotel from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. That's in Westney Road in Mangere, 63 Westney Road. They're looking for registrations for this Zero Suicide in New Zealand Response, and there are a number of speakers associated, I think mostly with the Mental Health Foundation. The CEO, the Chief Executive, Sean Robinson, will be speaking, and Moira Clooney, who is the Research, Development and Advocacy Manager at the Mental Health Foundation. So that's Thursday the 9th of March, just 2 days away, 1 to 5 at the Jet Park Airport Hotel. It's $35, and you could get in touch with Grow New Zealand or the Mental Health Foundation about that. We've also got a one-day conference about addiction, codependency and grieving. That's on the 18th of March from 8:30 to 5, and it is at the Kawai Pura Pura. At Kawai Pura Pura. That's the 18th of March, and the cost of that is $99. That's Take It From Us. Thank you, listeners, for your involvement.